click, 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 and you can look around like you were standing there with us. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week is Gadget Week. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Yay, Gadget Week.
Yay, we haven't had a Gadget Week in a while.
I know.
Yeah, the last time we attempted one, it was kind of a complaining about lack of gadgets week.
Yes, it was. There's maybe a little bit of this. I know at least one, I've got one rant planned.
Okay.
Maybe not a rant, but something along those same lines. Shall we dive right in? We've got five gadgets to talk about, and I suppose in no particular order other than the one that we...
A little bit of housekeeping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we kind of didn't get an episode up last week.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But that's okay, dear listener. Checks in the mail. Refunds are on their way.
Yep.
Fear not. Yeah, it was a busy week.
Yeah, it was crazy. This time of year gets busy for us, so we're probably going to finish up season three here in a few weeks and then take a break until the first of the year.
Exactly. Yes. That sounds good to me. All right, cool. So we can jump into the feature.
Since we're not going to be here in December and it's the day after Halloween, we can do that obnoxious thing and talk about holiday gifts and Christmas.
Yeah, before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Contribute to the commercialization of the holidays.
Yes.
That's all right. I'm into gadgets. It's fun.
Me too.
Okay. You want to start off with the, I don't know how to say this, so I'm just going to take a swing at it. The I get it. It's like a joke on multi-pass.
Yeah.
Okay. I kept wanting to say multi-tool, which is not it at all. This is the multi-pass mini.
Yes, it is. So presumably there is already a larger one out there, and they've Johnny Ived it a bit and made it a little smaller and thinner.
I'm sure it's got chamfered edges.
It might have.
Yeah, but it's more expensive than the big one.
Actually, I think they have lowered the price.
Huh.
It's on Kickstarter right now, and you can get it for around $70. And what this is a hardware device for password management.
Interesting. So is this like one password in your pocket, sort of?
Yeah, it is kind of like one password in your pocket. My take on it is they have the multi-pass device itself, which is pretty much a specialized card reader. And then you have a card that you put in it that stores all of your encrypted password information and that sort of thing. So you can carry it around with you and all that. And you plug your card into the device and you select, looks like from a little display on the device, which password you want. And it plops it into password form fields in your web browser.
Interesting. So how does it make that last leap?
Presumably it's looking for a password field on the web page.
Interesting.
Would be my guess. Because I know there's Chrome compatibility. I believe they're working on or will have Firefox compatibility. So I mean there's some back and forth discussion there that it's having with the browser.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's wild. Like so it's like a peripheral, you swipe a credit card like thing through. And that's wild. So if you're shopping for Julian Assange this
yes,
holiday season, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah. This could be handy for anyone who does a lot of travel. If you're traveling around and accessing things from a lot of different computers, like maybe do some kind of network computer work or that sort of thing. So
Yeah, wow. Or
if you're just really paranoid about security and want it stored on a little card that's not connected to the internet anywhere.
Mm. Yeah, and presumably if someone found the card, it wouldn't be useful even if they had the device because they would still need to know, like, you know, I'm assuming it just stores the password.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they say, when I was a little kid, they'd always say, you know, like driver's license age and you're starting to get out and about, they'd be like, never put your house key in your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you lose your wallet, then they know where you live.
And they have the key. Yeah.
The thieves will have the key to get into your house.
Yeah. But at the same time, insurance companies would give you keys, that keychains that had like addresses on them. So if the keys got lost, they would
know who to rob.
Yeah.
So if you have security conscious people on your list, this would be a fun little thing.
Yeah. I could see myself using it.
Yeah. You've got two factor on a bunch of services. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this would, and it causes problems with like API access and webhooks and things like that. I wonder if this would be a suitable replacement.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if it would be. And even using it, I wonder if you could even use it in conjunction with the two-factor. Because, like you said, for API access, a lot of things that offer two-factor authentication, since you can't do that through an API, they'll just give you a ridiculously long encrypted API or token to use for authentication that's way more secure than your password was.
Right.
So I wonder if you could just store this token and access it somehow.
Mm. That would be good. You know, like the thing that one of the things that always struck me about having a Bitcoin wallet on my phone is sort of the inherent unrecoverability of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're like, well, write it down. I'm like, write it down? Is that that's the answer?
Yeah. Use your fancy pen.
That's true. I usually would just take a picture of it and put it in Dropbox. That's pretty secure. That seems safe.
Along with your private key.
Definitely no problem there.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. I should be able to subpoena the NSA to get all of my backups.
All of your backups.
See, then they'd be offering, then it would be like, there'd be a benefit.
It would be a service. They could charge money to spy on us.
So that's probably enough on that. So you can check that out on Kickstarter, the Mooly Tool Pass. That's what I'm going to call it from now on. So that was number one. Number two. The TP-Link Smart Wi-Fi LED Bulb.
It's a mouthful.
Yes, it just rolls off the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what's cool about this. Longtime listeners will know that both Kelly and I are big fans of the Amazon Echo device.
And as well as the Philips Hue lighting system.
Yeah, one of the coolest use cases for it is to control the lighting in your environment. And it probably sounds very lazy or not that big a deal, but being able to dim the lights from the couch is just like the best thing ever. The problem is that the Hue bulbs, I think the entry level price for the Hue bulbs is something like $180.
Because you have to buy the bridge.
Yeah, you buy a bridge and it comes with three bulbs, which is fine because you probably need that to get started anyway. But if you're kind of on the fence and you're like, well, I don't know really if I'm going to love this and I don't want to drop almost $200 on it. Plus, the Hue bulbs, they have a feature that I have found less and less interesting over time, which is that they have a wide range of colors that you can choose from.
Yeah, I don't use those at all.
We use it. We will set it and forget it. So in the bedroom, we have a particular like a color that we use in the bedroom that's very dim. But, you know, because you literally never want like to be blasting the lights in there. But really everywhere else, it's kind of like a normal white that is dimmed to some percentage.
Yeah. Now, Hue, they do make white Hue bulbs now that you can get for like $15 a piece.
Mm-hmm. But they still require the bridge.
Yes, that's true.
And so the beauty of this TP-Link Smart Wi-Fi LED bulb is that it's easy to remember the name. And at least it's advertised as, it's just white bulbs, but they're dimmable. And it's advertised that they work with the Amazon Echo, the Alexa services. And that they're freestanding.
Yeah, they don't need a bridge to connect to.
Mm, which is really cool, because I'd like to do that. It's hardly ever that I'm in my office, not during the day, so I don't usually need the lights. But now that we're getting into the winter months, it gets dark pretty early here, and it would be nice to be able to just turn on. I've got two lamps that take normal bulbs. It'd be cool to be able to turn those on instead of the icky fluorescent bulbs on the ceiling. So that would be nice.
The Hue bulbs, that bridge can support up to 20 light bulbs, I believe, which on the one hand sounds like a lot of light bulbs, but when you're talking about an entire house, maybe not necessarily so.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if one bridge controlling 20 light bulbs ends up being better in terms of connectivity and Wi-Fi availability than it does to have 20 separate connected devices using up your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, good question. That is a problem. So if you had like, because we have, I don't know how many Hue bulbs we have, but it's quite a few. It's more than 10. And if that was like 10 more devices on the, you know, it's only one device on the network because they go through the bridge. Yeah. And then I think they Zigbee to each other. So having 20 extra devices on my network, we already seem to be having pretty bad network collision problems on our router at home.
Yeah, that could be some of my problems.
Yeah, I mean, we have easily 40 or 50 devices on the Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And we have problems with the Wi-Fi, and they're very intermittent and weird and tough to diagnose, and you just have to reboot the thing. And, you know, I have no idea really what it is, but I know that a thing called network collisions happens, and it can happen when you have too many things connected to a Wi-Fi hub. So I suspect that having a bunch of light bulbs could be problematic.
Yeah, I guess if you have a router, like a dual band router that does like a 2.4 gigahertz and a 5 gigahertz, you could just connect all of your Internet of Things devices to the 2.5 and then use your 5 gigahertz band for everything else.
Mm, that's a good idea. There's also, this isn't actually on our list, but Google announced recently a suite of hardware devices. We've talked about the most interesting thing in the past, Google Home, so we didn't really need to bring it up. But they also have this thing called Google Wi-Fi, I think, which is kind of like a repeater, but it seems to be a little bit more interesting than that. That extends your Wi-Fi range, but I bet you it also helps with the number of connected devices.
It probably does. I recently bought a Wi-Fi extender for use here in the office, and we've noticed fewer problems with our Wi-Fi overall now that I have like maybe half a dozen items connected to the extender.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. So cool. So I think for an entry level geek who's thinking maybe getting involved with like Echo stuff and the lighting, you know, for like under $100, you can get an Amazon Dot and one of these LED bulbs, and you're off to the races. Yeah. You're good to go.
Yeah, $85, and the bulbs are $34 a piece.
Mm-hmm. And you too can be part of the future.
You too can have this problem that I'm going to have next week when I have a friend coming to visit who will be staying here and sleeping in the office, and I have to have this conversation of don't touch any of the light switches. Just tell Alexa to turn the lights off.
I taped all of mine.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah.
Remember when, like, you were in school and all the light switches had the metal cages around them?
Yeah. I should put a little sign on the tape that says what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So that's number two. Number three. This one's mine. The Ricoh Theta S.
Yes. This one is yours. Is this the one you have and have been playing with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's nice.
It is really nice. So this thing is a 360-degree, it's really a spherical camera. It's mm-hmm. like 360 globe. So it's looks like, what does it look like? It looks like a Roku remote control, actually. It's about that size. It's about the size of a normal TV remote. And it's got two fisheye lenses, one on the front and one on the back. And you just hold it anywhere and press the button. It really doesn't matter which way you point it, which is hilarious. And it takes like a picture in every direction from where it's positioned. And you can do photos and videos. And once you have done that, you can upload them to the website. I think it says like Theta 360 or something like that. You just upload it and they're made available online, kind of like the inside street view you might have seen on Google Maps, where you go inside of a business and you can sort of pan around and look in every direction.
Yeah, it's like a virtual tour type player thing.
Yep. And what's even cooler, and I think it's a little bit of a cart before the horse, because it's like, okay, I can take these pictures, but how does anybody look at them? Because you can't really look at them in the normal way. They just look all like crazy distorted and stretched out. So, you know, not like a panorama, but just like weird. And you can, there's a mobile application that uses the accelerometer so that you can hold the phone up in front of you to look at the photo and then just move around and kind of just sort of point it at different areas of the photo, which is pretty cool. But then you can also do it in sort of dual mode, where you put it inside of some kind of head viewer, like a Google Cardboard or something like that, and you can look around inside of the area. And I've been using this thing for probably 2 months, and I love it. It is so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So if you're like at a, you know, we used it, we went apple picking recently, and I just like, you just hold the thing up there. It's like click. You don't have to point at anything. You just like click, 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 And you can look around like you were standing there with us. It's really cool. It gives you a much better sense of scale and like the sky. It really does give mm-hmm. you a much better sense of what it was like standing there instead of just looking at this picture of the kids with a bag of apples.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And also the past couple of weekends, we've been constructing a new screen house at our summer campsite place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kicking myself both weekends I went down. I forgot to put it in my bag, but I was kicking myself because it would be perfect to just go inside. And, you know, Erica was home watching the kids. So to kind of give her a feel
for the work that got done.
Yeah. And the size of it, because she's not there. So it's, we don't have a ton of space. So it's mm-hmm. kind of cozy, let's say. It's way bigger than a shed, but it's still, you know, it's supposed to be like two bedrooms and a storage area. So she's got to kind of get a feel for how much room there actually is. And this thing would have been perfect, but I forgot to bring it, unfortunately. But like my office, just like, oh, you know what? You want to see what it's like to be sitting in my office? Just, you can go online. We'll even link to it in the show notes. You can like look around in my office. It's amazing.
Yeah. And be jealous of your awesome brick wall.
I do have a pretty awesome brick wall.
You do.
It's one of those hipster buildings where people used to do real work.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just pretend to feel like we're doing real work.
Yeah, now it's all a bunch of programmers.
Mm. So yeah, so the Ricoh Theta S, the S indicates that it's the more expensive one. They have a more entry-level Ricoh Theta, which I imagine is just lower.
Lower resolution, probably.
Lower resolution, yeah, which is worth pointing out. The resolution on these photos is, the videos are like insanely huge. Like every single video is like 5 gig because it's just got so much data. Yeah, but the Theta S is $346. I think the entry level one is $99.
Oh, yeah, big difference there.
Yeah, I could be wrong. I think it's pretty inexpensive. They come in like different colors and stuff, a little bit more, I think, geared toward the teeny bopper set.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even sure if I really need all this resolution. I wonder if I could turn it down a little bit to make it a little more easy to upload the videos, because it takes a while.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of resolution you really need there to get something that looks good and kind of still gives you that feeling of being in the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you could, you'll be able to check out what we're talking about in the show notes. You'll link through to one of the, like say the office photo or something, but it is really cool. And I can see once more people have viewers, you know, the Oculus stuff from Facebook, I could imagine being able to select one to use as the room that you're sitting in.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, the other thing it has that I haven't used yet is it has live streaming. I have not tried that, but I suspect that feature is not available on the less expensive ones. So yeah, Ricoh Theta S, $346 buckaroonies.
Cool.
Mm. Let's see. Why don't we jump over to your next one?
Okay.
This will be number four, the Yamaha DD65 electronic drum pad. Another one that rolls off the tongue.
Yes, another one that rolls off the tongue. I'm either the worst parent or the best parent. This was supposed to be a Christmas gift that ended up being a night before Halloween gift. Not that we're making Halloween a gift giving holiday. Yes. Marching season was over and all that stuff, and it just
drumming.
The incessant drumming happens anyway, so we thought we would just facilitate it a little.
Mm-hmm.
This is, as the long and flowing name implies, it's an electronic drum kit, and it's a fairly compact electronic drum kit. I'd say it's about like 30 inches wide by maybe 18 inches tall. So it's not huge. It has 8 drum pads, 2 kick pedals. And at first I worried that the drum pads would be too small given the overall dimensions, but playing on it is fine. And, it has several cool features.
Mm-hmm.
It has, I think, 250 pre-programmed drum sounds.
Wow.
And a bunch of pre-programmed full kits, and I think 100 songs to teach you how to play drums, and you can hook your MP3 player into it and play along to your own music and mix the levels and that sort of thing.
Cool.
And it's just for what it is, it's a really good, you know, really good gadget if you're into music and percussion.
Mm. Yeah, we're in the market for something like this because we just don't have the room for a real size drum set. We had Cooper, we got a small acoustic set for Cooper when he was little, and he really liked it. And Maggie seems to really like it too. But it was nice, but it was not that sturdy, and it kind of fell apart. And it's a little too small right. for him now.
Yeah, it's like a little kid drum set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is. I would recommend it. I will say if you use it, you pretty much have to have the headphones, which is probably a good thing. It has speakers on it, but the volume output from the speakers, even turned up all the way, is not very high.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really hear the drum sounds that well over the sound of your sticks hitting the pads.
Right.
But, you could hook it up to an amp if you wanted to, mm-hmm. but, to me, the great feature about it is the headphones.
Yeah, I'm sure any parent of drummer kids knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm, and this is only $219, which is, it's not nothing, but it's cheaper than a real size kit, and it's quieter and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this a tabletop thing, or does it stand up, or what's the deal there?
You could put it on a tabletop. It actually has slots in the bottom of it to just sit on top of a snare stand.
Mm.
Hmm. So we just got a second snare drum stand.
Oh wow! It really is compact.
So
cool.
Yeah, that worked well. And the pedals it came with aren't great. They're more touch pads that you step on.
Yeah, they look kind of like sewing machine.
Yeah, yeah, but there are other compatible pedals that are more like actual drum kit pedals that you can get for it. We just haven't, but that is available should you want that option.
Nice. Yeah, I am definitely tempted. I was looking at another one that had meh reviews, but this one mm-hmm. seems, you guys have tried it, you dig it, you're digging it more over time, not less, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So, moving right along to number 5. So, this one, this is the Roku Express.
I had not heard of this until you linked to it the other day.
Yeah, it's like, but really, it's really what I'm thinking of here is more of the entire category of, there's like a universe of gadgets available for cord cutters now
mm-hmm.
that allow you to get Netflix and Amazon Video and Hulu and the Amazon Prime stuff and Spotify and Pandora and like all this streaming audio and video without cable, just over internet. And mm-hmm. the prices, so one of the, when we looked around, there was a bit of, a little dearth of really cool, crazy gadgets. It seems like a year ago, there were a ton of really cool, crazy gadgets. It seems like there are not as many now, but the prices are so low.
Yeah, $30. A Roku, the low-end Rokus used to be $100.
Yeah. And so you've got this Roku Express. There's a Fire Stick. There's a new Google Chromecast, which is mm-hmm. really cool. It's a little bit of a different deal where you can you're basically sending, you'd be watching a YouTube video on your phone. You can kind of cast it to the Chromecast. Yeah. So it's not actually, it just sort of the phone hands off the link to the Chromecast, which then picks up where you left off. So you're not streaming through your phone,
mm-hmm.
it just hands it over. But all of these things the prices are just absurdly low. It's like, what, you might as well just try it. It's like total stocking stuffer level.
Right. It's $30, $25-$30 for all of them now, which is great. They're not really a good fit for us.
Oh, yeah.
They're great if you want a cheap way to sort of cut the cord. If you're willing to invest in a little more money, I would just say skip it and buy a PlayStation 4.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you've got all of these Netflix and Hulu and all that sort of thing, and you've got your Blu-ray player and DVD player, and now you've also got your virtual reality and that sort of thing.
That's true. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we've got we've got a lot of that stuff on Xbox too, but man, mm-hmm. the user interface is so not conducive, at least that one. I mean, that interface is like pretty...
Yeah, I really like the PS4 interface.
Mm, yeah, I haven't seen it. And those are probably like $300 or $400.
Probably. I haven't checked the price in a long time. I would suspect it's probably the $299.
Mm. Yeah, I've been hearing, there's a new Nintendo out too that people are raving about.
Yeah, it comes out in March.
Yeah, so I think that there's this trend of just the low end of mm-hmm. some of these product categories is just getting so inexpensive that you're going to see, like, they're, I guarantee you they're going to be like hanging up on a, in a blister pack in a gas station, you know?
Yeah. At some point. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Let me just grab one of these Roku Express. We're headed to the hotel and, you know, we're just traveling. I'm just going to grab a Roku Express.
Yeah. You know, that's a, and that's a good point. You know, I'd mentioned the PlayStation is sort of the high end option that gives you a bunch of other things too, but realistically, a lot of people don't need that. There's going to be, like my dad, for instance, or, like you said, if you're traveling and don't want to pay for all this stuff from the hotel, or want to maybe use your own accounts and things so that you've got your recommendations and your history and all of that stuff, or, you know, like you're going to the cabin for the week on vacation, or who knows, but they're affordable enough now where you can just spend $30 and buy one on the off chance that there will be a point sometime within the next year that you will use it.
Right. Yeah. Or even if you have a gaming console of some kind, you're not going to have a bunch of them. You probably have more than one TV.
Right. Probably more than one TV. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've got like TV in the, whatever, in the kitchen or the bedroom or something, just like plug one of these things into the HDMI port and boom, go.
Yeah. If you're not like us and don't own two PlayStations. Oh, wait, three PlayStations.
Oh, geez. It's like, wait.
We have a problem.
We like to have a PlayStation per family member.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Just in case.
One PlayStation, two computers per family member, that's pretty much our standard.
But only one phone, which is weird, per person.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, I think pretty much all of these make pretty good holiday gifts for the geek in your life.
Yeah, I would be happy with any of these.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks.